Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. The most entertaining 60 minutes of your day is now underway. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports, coming to you live here in Studio West, right here on WKAR AM 870 1051 FM. That's right, as you heard my man Chayo say, I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great show, as we customarily do. When don't we have a great show, right? We've got a great show, though, coming your way. A lot to cover on today's Current Sports. You know, for July 10th, 2018, you know, this is kind of like what we call in the sports reporting world, kind of like the dead period of sports, where really the only big thing going on is like baseball. Well, I haven't been able to say that the last two, now 3 years now, because there seems to be always something going on in the summertime. A lot of that having to do with, you know, the NBA free agency, also the NBA Summer League, which has really gained a lot of steam in recent years. Also here locally, you know, the biggest sporting event of the summer, in my opinion, has to be the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am here in the area of mid-Michigan. And also, let's not forget about Lansing United, which this year not only had a men's soccer team, I should say has a men's soccer team, but also in its first year this season doing this, decided to put together a women's team. So it's a very busy summer here in mid-Michigan, a lot going on. On today's Current Sports, we've got a few topics that may be of interest to you. We'll talk about the World Cup. I'm excited to bring in studio a dear friend of the show. His name is Brooks Lambeer. Brooks is a Midwest regional scout for the Portland Timbers. Brooks happens to be here on the campus of Michigan State University as I speak, because he's helping the Michigan State soccer program with a summer camp. So Brooks is going to take a chill pill for at least, you know, an hour to join us here on Current Sports. He'll be here on campus live in Studio West around 1:30 p.m. to talk about the World Cup, and he'll help preview the semifinals and talk about the fanfare that has been the World Cup this year in comparison to other years. So you don't want to miss that conversation. And as promised on Monday's Current Sports, I'm finally going to get to the conversation concerning the Michigan State football team out in Las Vegas having the fifth best odds to win a Big Ten championship. I kid you not, folks. I mean, this is a team that completely flipped the script, right? Two seasons ago, they go 3-9. They reach double-digit wins, go to the Holiday Bowl, beat Washington State, one of the best coaching jobs, arguably the best coaching job in Mark D'Antonio's tenure, yet Michigan State still getting slighted yet again by the national pundits, and I should say the national fan base of college football, predicting that Michigan State will finish not even in the top three, but fifth best odds to win the Big Ten championship. That's crazy, right? And you know what's so funny? Yesterday, after yesterday's Current Sports, you know, there was this big debate going on behind the glass. I don't know how it got started, engineer Ian Hawley, but there was a big debate that happened behind the glass concerning the college football playoff format. How did that conversation even begin? Who started this fight?
I don't even remember, to be quite honest with you. I think we were just talking about hypotheticals in the world of sports in general. But really, the debate took off about the playoff when schools like UCF were brought up, you know, non-Power 5 teams that don't really have a chance to showcase their stuff in the current playoff system. And it kind of just spiraled from there.
You had some strong thoughts on it.
I think we all had some strong thoughts.
Yeah. We talked for about, 10 minutes after yesterday's show here in Studio West. I know Connor Mathis, Alec Rio, and Jack Kerwin, they were all kind of going back and forth about this whole college football playoff format. Should it be changed or should it stay the same where you have the top four teams competing for a national championship? So we'll bring that debate to the show prior to our first break. And of course, we want to hear from you all. Multiple ways in which you can chime in. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media. Many of you already tuned in right now via Facebook.com/WKAR News, where we have the live stream up and running. Comment below that video if you would like. And you can join us on Twitter. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. And after we talk about, the MSU Vegas odds and the college football playoff format, and, after we bring in Brooks Lambeer of the Portland Timbers to talk some World Cup soccer, I want to close the show out with a story that is absolutely incredible. I have been reading about this story in recent days. It has captivated the world, and it is one of the most incredible rescue missions you will ever, ever hear about. And today, some good news happened. All right, so I want to close the show today on a pretty high emotional note. So stick around. I'll bring that story to you and wait until you hear the details of this story. And for many of you who have been following, this rescue mission, you know what story I'm talking about. All right. So without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners. As many of you know, you do not have to wait until November to check out your Michigan State men's basketball team in action. That's because the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am gets underway yet again today, featuring many Spartan hoopers. And it really gives a first glance at the incoming freshman class. Spartan big man Nick Ward currently leads the league in points per game with an impressive 49.5 points per game. Again, it's summer league basketball. Not a lot of defense is being played, even though that is impressive, Nick. I'm not trying to slight you, Nick. And we're only in the second week here. Now, fellow Spartan Josh Langford is also a top three scorer, averaging 28 points per game. So, what games can you check out tonight, you ask? Well, first game, 6 p.m., green team versus gold. You can check out Nick Ward, Kyle Arnes, Xavier Tillman, Foster Lawyer in that game as well. At 7 p.m., black versus gray, you've got Langford, Thomas Kithier, Cassius Winston, Gabe Brown playing in that one. And at 8 p.m., blue versus red, I believe Nick Ward playing again in that game. Kyle Arnes, Matt McQuaid, Marcus Bingham Jr. So, again, folks, if you are a Michigan State men's basketball fan and want to check out some basketball, and it's really cool because after these games, many fans go right up to these players. Again, it's not really protected. You go right up to these players. You can ask for an autograph, get a picture. It's a really cool environment. And, my favorite word, it's free. All right? You can't beat that. Can't beat that. All right, again, Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am at Aim High Sports Complex out in Diamonddale, Michigan. All right, Spartan football hero turned American hero. That is the latest transition former special teams player Jalen Watts Jackson has now undergone after breaking his hip from the legendary play that made him immortal in Michigan State football history. He played two more seasons here in EL. He is foregoing his final season of eligibility, though, to serve his country in the Air Force. How cool is this story, right? Jalen Watts Jackson says he has no regrets about his football career at MSU. He had this to say in an interview over the weekend. Quote, a lot of people were confused. They thought I was going into the Air Force to play football. My dad was in the military. He used to joke, quote, if you can't figure out what to do in life, go to the military. And it's pretty ironic. It ended up happening. I feel like it was God's plan. I'm actually in the works of getting Jalen Wash Jackson here on WKAR's Current Sports. Keep tuned for that news. All right, he's an outstanding young man. I got a chance to listen to an extended interview with Fox 2 News in Detroit with him yesterday. And I tell you what, that's a dude, Ian, that does not have to pay for anything as long as he's in East Lansing, right? I mean, he's known for that play. You know, the fumbled snap where he took it to the house, broke his hip. You know, what a play. But, you know, he's a guy that, other than that play, didn't make a huge impact with the MSU football program. But, I mean, what more can you say about that play, right?
Yeah, what more do you really need from Jalen Wash Jackson? Yeah. One of the most iconic plays in Michigan State football history. And to do it against our biggest rival is outstanding. And I'm happy for the guy that he's found his calling and going into the Air Force.
That's great stuff, man. Everybody's journey is different, right? And I really think that Michigan State is one day going to make a statue of that play. Can you see that happening?
I really hope so. It'd be great to come back to campus and see that every time.
Wouldn't that be cool? Right outside of Spartan Stadium. That would be absolutely awesome. MSU Athletics, get on that. All right. All right. Michigan State volleyball coach Kathy George has announced the 2018 Spartan volleyball schedule coming off a trip to the NCAA National Quarterfinals a year ago. The Spartans will be working in six new freshmen in addition to the 9 returning players on the 2018 roster. Now, still to come is the announcement of the Big Ten television package as well as game times for most of the Big Ten Conference games. Those will be released closer to the start of preseason camp. Notable games to look out for are the game against Penn State on September 28th, the games against Ohio State on October 14th and November 7th, and the games against, of course, rival U of M on November 17th and the 24th. All right, Michigan State women's soccer coach Tom Saxton announced the hiring of former Spartan Mary Fiebernitz as a volunteer assistant coach on Monday. Now, Fiebernitz is now the third former Michigan State player to join Saxton's staff, along with associate head coach Tammy Farnham and assistant coach Stacy DeLonge. Now, Tom Saxton was thrilled with the signing, saying, quote, we are delighted to welcome Mary back to Michigan State. She was an outstanding college player and leader for our program during her playing career. She also did a great job as a volunteer in the winter of 2016. The time Mary spent with professional teams the past 2 years also provides her with incredibly valuable experience at the highest level. Mary has a great future in coaching, and we are very grateful to have her on our staff. All right, the EMU, Eastern Michigan University Athletics Programs debacle has made another turn south. Now, the feds are currently investigating EMU's athletic program on whether or not they discriminated against female athletes by not offering enough opportunities for them. The investigation began with a complaint filed with the Federal Office of Civil Rights in late April, about a month after Eastern announced it would be cutting 4 sports, according to documents filed by the university in a federal lawsuit. All right, the Detroit Pistons defeated the New Orleans Pelicans 105-97 in the Las Vegas Summer League at Cox Pavilion on Monday. This was a dominant performance from Detroit as they led by at least 8 points for the final 3 quarters. At one point through the second quarter, the Pistons were shooting, get this, 78% from the field. The tone was set in the first quarter when the Pistons, outscoring the Pels 33-22, a strong showing in the final quarter by New Orleans was the only thing that made the final score respectable, considering Detroit led by 25 points at times during the contest. All right, the Detroit Tigers. Last night's game between the Tigers and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays was a roller coaster ride of emotions. If you rep the old English D, the Tigers defense gave up 5 runs in the first and 2 runs in the third, stemming from the struggles of starting pitcher Francisco Liriano, who gave up 7 earned runs total in 2.1 innings of pitching. The Tigers scored 3 runs in the top of the third to show some life, only to get thrown back down to 7-3. Lead from the Rays' explosive offense. So the Tigers end up losing that game, falling to 40-53 on the year, and have also lost 16 of their last 20. Former Detroit Lions tight end Brandon Pettigrew may be in some legal hot water According to a public court summary viewed by the Detroit Free Press, Pettigrew was charged with two counts of aggravated assault, theft of services, and public drunkenness. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for July 18th. The Post-Gazette reports that a criminal complaint stated that Pettigrew did not want to pay a $97 limousine fare and that Pettigrew and the limousine driver got into an argument. The driver then called the police, who noted that Pettigrew was visibly intoxicated and unsteady on his feet. Pettigrew was upset and kept getting close to the police officers, according to the report, before becoming more upset and moving forward to the officers while aggressively arguing with them. He then allegedly punched Officer Patrick Fernadel three times in the chest, according to the complaint, all over a $97 limousine fare. All right, this morning, the NFLPA, NFL Players Association, announced that it will be filing a grievance against the National Football League for their controversial national anthem policy. Now, in the announcement, which said the anthem rules are inconsistent with the collective bargaining agreement and infringes on players' rights, the NFLPA confirmed the league has agreed to discuss the issue further before the case moves forward. I'll have more thoughts on that later on this hour. Quick World Cup update from behind the glass. We've got Connor Mathis bringing us an update on what we can expect today in World Cup action out in Russia. What's up, Connor?
All right, so just a little bit after the show today, the first semifinal of this year's World Cup will get started on Fox and Telemundo with France taking on Belgium. For Belgium, this is their first semifinal in over 30 years, and with a win, it would make their first ever appearance in a World Cup final. Meanwhile, France looks to make its return to the final for the first time since 2006. The second semifinal match between England and Croatia will take place tomorrow at 2 p.m. And in other soccer news, Cristiano Ronaldo will be joining Juventus. The Portuguese star player will be taking his talents to the Serie A champions. Real Madrid confirmed the transfer today and will receive £105 million, which translates to $139 million for the star forward. Now, last season, Ronaldo helped lead Real Madrid to its third straight Champions League title, while Juventus fell to Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
That's big news. Has Ronaldo played his entire career with Real Madrid? He hasn't? So he's floated around then,
yeah.
Huh, kind of?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. That's big news, though. $139 million, that's U.S. dollars, but £105. Very impressive stuff there. All right. Fifth seed, Juan Martín del Potro, set up a Wimbledon quarterfinal meeting with Rafael Nadal after finally wrapping up victory over Frenchman Gilles Simon. The Argentine was two sets to one up on the world number 53 when play was suspended on Monday night. He lost his serve early in the fourth set but fought back and served for the match at 5-4, only for Simone to save four match points. And also, big news concerning Serena Williams. Got the chance to catch a bit of this match this morning, having cruised through her first four matches here. Serena Williams had her first tough test today. She received that test as she passed it with flying colors. The seven-time champ dropped her first set of the tournament to Italy's Camilla Giorgi, but came through 3-6, 6-3, 6-4 to reach the semifinals for the 11th time. In my opinion, the greatest female athlete to ever walk planet Earth. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it pushing.
Thank you. He's number one because of, you know, the production, the individual statistics. He's had a revolving door in terms of the supporting cast around him from year to year, and yet he doesn't miss a beat. We were preparing for the Saints. We watched the Patriots against the Saints. Some of the plays he made, he threw a touchdown pass to Rob Gronkowski, off schedule, just hanging in the pocket. I see that as mobility. I see that as extending a play. But may not be running around. In fact, sometimes running around, he may look like a baby giraffe. But he finds a way in the pocket to keep his eyes downfield when there's chaos around him and deliver throws time and time again, especially in big moments.
You know, I don't know why Kirk Cousins, former Michigan State University quarterback, great. Of course, he went on to play quarterback for the Washington Redskins, in which they franchise tagged him, it seems like, 58 times. And he now has, of course, signed with the Minnesota Vikings. Kirk Cousins was interviewed. I don't know if you guys have been watching the NFL's top 100 on the NFL Network. I love watching it because you get to see, you know, what players and coaching personnel, who they believe to be the top 100 players. And, you know, no surprise here. You know, when it was announced, this is back in June, I believe. It was announced that Tom Brady was number one on that list. But they interviewed Cousins on the NFL Network. And Kirk Cousins is getting a lot of flack for comparing Tom Brady's scrambling ability to that of a giraffe, which I don't know why he's, because if you read that headline, first off, it's like, oh my gosh, that's kind of like, that's disrespectful, Kirk. What are you doing, man? You can't say that about the greatest quarterback of all time, right? But if you listen to that snippet, I mean, it's a compliment, you know, it really is. I mean, Kirk Cousins wasn't trying to diss Tom Brady. And to be honest, I mean, watching Tom Brady scramble, it isn't pretty. But he gets the job done at the end of the day. But when you read that headline, initially when I heard the headline, Ian, I said, oh, that doesn't sound right. But then I listened to it, and he was actually paying Tom Brady a compliment. Sure, Tom Brady isn't Michael Vick in scrambling. But this dude has an arm that rivals none. The greatest arm in NFL history, in my opinion. He can throw on the run. Don't let him plant his feet or give him too much time because he will find somebody. He can put the ball on a thread, fit it through any window, just unreal. And no surprise that the NFL Network ranked Brady as the number one overall player in the NFL. Do you dispute that ranking at all, Ian? Do you think Tom Brady is still the best player in the game of football?
I believe so, at least at his position, for sure. I mean, there's not a lot you can say against Tom Brady, especially over the past few seasons. I know, minus the Deflategate scandal, which is still, you know, kind of up in the air depending on who you talk to. But I don't think Kirk Cousins was necessarily being disrespectful. I think he was just trying to say, look, it's not the most graceful thing you've ever seen out on the football field, but time and time again, he finds a way to get the job done. And that's really all that matters.
Yeah, he's really just unreal. And watching Tom Brady play, I mean, man, for yet another year, I mean, this dude goes to the Super Bowl, even though they don't win it. And you got to give Philly a lot of credit. And who would have thought that, you know, another former Michigan State quarterback, Nick Foles, you know, he ends up being thrown into the fire and dealt with it. Nick Foles would never have another game like that, especially on that kind of level in the Super Bowl. I mean, nobody saw that coming. But, you know, just the fact that Tom Brady in the NFL, where there's a lot of parity, you know, the fact that he can still get you there, it's still remarkable at his age, for sure. So I had no problem with what Kirk Cousins had to say. And I agree with the ranking as well. I think that Tom Brady is special. We all know that. I think he is the greatest player to ever line up behind center. All right, from that, I want to talk some college football briefly here. And Michigan State fans, I don't know how you should feel about this story. It shouldn't make you happy. If anything, you know, it should be old hat to you by now, right? Really. When I read it, I said, oh, here we go again. This is, and to be honest, I think Mark D'Antonio, he likes having some kind of chip on his program shoulder. He likes this stuff. Michigan football finished behind Michigan State in the Big Ten standings last year. Out in Vegas, though, they feel like the Wolverines' chances to win the conference this upcoming fall, they like Michigan's chances better than Michigan State's. According to Westgate Las Vegas Superbook odds, this was actually tweeted by college football reporter Brett McMurphy. U of M listed at 4-1 to win the Big Ten, third best among all conference teams in the Big Ten, while Michigan State sits at 12-1, fifth best odds to win the Big Ten Conference. Interesting, right? When you look at the full odds here, the full list here, Ohio State is your favorite. No surprise there. 10-11. Wisconsin at 5-2. Michigan at 4-1. Penn State at 5-1. Michigan State, as I mentioned, 12-1. Then you have both Iowa and Nebraska tied at 40-1 odds. Northwestern and Purdue both tied at 80-1 odds. Minnesota 100-1. Indiana and Maryland tied for 300-1 odds. And then at the bottom of the Big Ten Conference, as expected, Illinois and lowly Rutgers at 1,000-1 odds. You know, at this point, you know, and you look at how last year panned out for Michigan State. We all know the story. I mentioned it at the top of the hour. Michigan State goes 10-3, 7-2 in the Big Ten Conference, finished third in the Big Ten East, followed by the Wolverines, who finish 8-5. So two wins less than Michigan State last season. Two wins less in the Big Ten Conference standings, going 5-4 in the Big Ten last year for the Maize and Blue. Michigan State toppled then number 7 U of M. If you remember, that was a 14-10 final in Ann Arbor on October 7th, my birthday, a day I'll never forget. It was just coming down, pouring rain. We all know that game, right? Turnovers galore. Michigan State able to find, as Mark D'Antonio says, the inches to win that game in some pretty bad conditions out in A-squared. Yet, Vegas is still looking at things for another season, saying, yeah, we like the Wolverines better than the Spartans this upcoming season. And, you know, I just can't help but say, Ian, I mean, this is all about the conversation of tradition, the conversation of history, I should say, and also media fanfare, to be honest with you. I mean, we all know that, you know, Mark D'Antonio is not going to make offseason headlines. If he is, he's going to do it in the world of recruiting. And I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to what Mark D'Antonio has been doing in the world of recruiting this offseason, but it is darn impressive. It is really, really impressive. I mean, he gets the, you know, in Dobbs, the top high school player in the state of Michigan. And other than, you know, and this is going back to Mark D'Antonio's Ohio roots, right? You know, working as a coach at Ohio State. Other than Ohio State, which, of course, dominates, as expected, the world of recruiting in its own state, Michigan State has done really well in the state of Ohio when it comes to the world of recruiting. But I think Mark D'Antonio, he likes this kind of stuff. You know, it's so funny when you compare the two coaches, the two big names here at Michigan State University, and Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio. You know, Tom Izzo talks about embracing the number one ranking, embracing being a top-seeded team, because you have to know how to play with that target on your back. Time and time again, Tom Izzo will talk about wanting his program to be in that conversation because that is how you establish yourself and your program and your school in the world of college sports. You don't hear that dialogue that loud from the mouth of Mark D'Antonio. You know, I've never heard, Ian, have you ever heard Mark D'Antonio sit up here and say, yeah, we want to be number one. We want that top ranking. Anytime rankings are asked, and I sit in these press conferences, you know, year after year, anytime, and I've learned, just not even, I asked them one ranking question, and it was just like, we don't care about rankings. Yeah, it's not what we do. We don't, we just, game by game, Find the inches. The football cliches. I mean, Mark Antonio is a cliche machine when it comes to his press conferences. Whereas Tom Izzo, sometimes Tom Izzo is honest to a fault. Sometimes he's too honest. But you don't hear that from Mark Antonio. You know, we want to be among, you know, the top team. Well, of course he does, but you don't hear him saying we want to be ranked number one. You're not going to hear that from Mark Antonio. So, in a way, Mark uses that to motivate his players, to motivate his program, and he loves proving people wrong. Now, when it comes to the overall perception, first off, I ask you, Ian Hawley, I mean, you being still a current student, a student who just graduated, I don't forget, you just graduated, dude, mm-hmm. A recent alum of this university. Not too long ago, you were a fan, of course, going to these games, wearing the green and white, and now you're in the reporting world. When you heard this story, Michigan State, fifth, not even top three, though. That's what I don't get. What was your immediate reaction?
I'm no longer surprised by it. It's every year, man. The disrespect continues. It doesn't matter how good we are, how bad we are. We're always going to get ranked lower than where we should be, especially when it comes to teams like Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Michigan. You know, I mean, Wisconsin's got the benefit of being one of the only real contenders year after year in their division of the Big Ten. And then Ohio State, like you say, dominates both on and off the field in football. But Michigan is one of those teams that has still somehow found a way to cling to their air of dominance that they had maybe at one time in the 90s, you know, back before I was even watching football. Mm-hmm. I heard they had a share of a title back there, but, you know, that's really the last thing they've accomplished in the world of college football. But Michigan finds a way to hang on to that, you know, we're a blue chip school or we're a blue blood school.
It's Jim Harbaugh.
Despite some of their downfalls over the past few seasons and the past few coaches they've had at Michigan. So, and again, Mark D'Antonio is not one of those guys who really cares about the rankings or really cares about being number one. He's just going to take the guys that he's got and he's going to prepare them to the best of his ability. He's going to take the coaches he's got and he's going to train them to the best of his ability. I mean, he's just one of those guys who wants to see people giving it their best effort, and he's satisfied with whatever the result may be if that happens. So not a big flashy guy, just one of those guys who's really there for the kids and there for the other coaches in his program.
And speaking of kids, I mean, and this is what Jim Harbaugh does. If there's anything that Jim Harbaugh has won, and we all know he's never been to Indy for a Big Ten championship game. He's never been to the college football playoff like Mark D'Antonio. Speaking of kids, though, again, he wins the offseason because of these headlines that just come out of nowhere that stay ingrained in the subconscious of fans out there, which influence Las Vegas odds. That's how it goes. I saw a story, and I kind of chuckled yesterday. A story, this was published by MLive, Aaron McMahon, who has been a guest here on WKAR's Current Sports many times. The headline reads, Jim Harbaugh wants more kids and to coach until he dies. Yeah, Jim Harbaugh recently took part in a promotional video for the Suburban Collection, one in which he joyrides around Ann Arbor in like a 2018 Dodge Challenger SRT Demon. Pretty cool. This is what Jim Harbaugh does. He just stays in your mind because he's always doing, you know, some antics, doing commercials, you know, taking his shirt off and playing football, spending the night at some recruit's house. This is what Jim Harbaugh does, taking his team to international trips. So when the host, as Harbaugh, father of, get this, seven already, if he wants more kids, the 54-year-old offered up a surprising response. Quote, I'm for more. More is more. So he goes on to say, and again, Harbaugh welcomed his latest child, John, to the world last January. He has four children, Addison, Catherine, Jack, and John, with his wife, Sarah, and three others, Jay, James, and Grace, from a previous marriage. His oldest son, Jay, is the running backs coach at Michigan. Another son, James, is currently a theater major at Michigan and made headlines last fall when he came out, if you remember, as a gay man. So... He also went on to say during this this interview that Harbaugh does not want to retire and he wants to coach until he dies. Jim Harbaugh knows what he's doing. You know, when potential recruits read these headlines, they say, "Wow, Jim seems like a cool guy. He's just out there." I don't know what it does, but it influences recruits to become really intrigued with the Michigan football program. It really does, and it influences fans out there to say, "Man, Jim Harbaugh, he's always in the headlines." He must be doing something right, right? He's always in the headlines for something positive and something cool and different. And he's the head coach of the most winningest college football program of all time. Yeah, Michigan sounds like a safe bet to really tear it up next season, when in reality they have not done anything under the Jim Harbaugh era. So if you are a betting man, I'm pretty sure a lot of people are probably looking at those Michigan State odds in fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw down 20.
That's an easy bet. Easy money right there.
Right? Throw down 20 and collect your check when the college football season is done. All right? All right. Let's hit our first break. I have not forgotten this about this debate because I know our current sports crew definitely want to dive into the college football playoff format. But before we do, we'll have a brief chat with Brooks Lambeer, who will be joining me in studio in just a moment. He is a Midwest regional scout for the Portland Timbers. We'll talk World Cup with Brooks Lambeer. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And again, to close out the show, we'll definitely be talking about the college football playoff format discussion. And just real quick, though, where do you fall? Do you think the format should be changed?
Yes, I think it should be expanded to 8 teams.
You think it should be expanded to 8 teams? You're all for expansion.
Yes, sir.
Connor Matthews behind the glass. Connor, where do you fall?
Expansion, 8 teams.
You think expansion as well? Is Alec behind there as well? Do we even have Jack in? I don't think Jack is
out. I think he was scared of the conversation.
Wow. Look at that. So is it even worth it? Because I'm all for expansion. I think he may be the only one that's for keeping it at 4.
He was very against expansion, and right, he was very passionate about it, but it seems that we've scared him off.
He chickened out then.
I know.
Jack, if you're listening, where are you, man? Yeah, he was scheduled to show up today, so we may table that then if he's not here, because it'll just be all of us agreeing then.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be a very fun segment. We got to at least have him on to talk about his reasoning why.
Well, we may have to table that, all right? In the meantime, though, we will not table it for our listeners. If you want to weigh in on that, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us on social media at facebook.com/WKAR News, where we have the live stream up and running there. And tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Well, right now, if you are tuned in on Facebook, on the Facebook live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News, you see our next guest, his face, his smiling face, joining you all wherever you may be. His name is Brooks Lambeer. He is a dear friend of Current Sports. He is a Midwest regional scout for the Portland Timbers, also an assistant soccer coach at Lawrence Tech University. He happens to be in town here in East Lansing, Michigan, helping out the Michigan State soccer program with a camp this week. That's what summer is all about, right, for the youth who are involved in sports. A lot of camps happening this summer. Brooks, thank you so much for taking some time out your day today.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate you having me on, as usual.
So right now you're helping out Damon Rensing, right, with the camp. How many camps do the Michigan State men's soccer program hold throughout the summer?
So they always have their ID camp, which is 2 days. So it's usually the beginning of July. And then these kind of community camps for the commuters and the younger middle school or early high school kids. There's about 4 of them, 2 in June and 2 in July. So
That's great stuff. What do you enjoy about working the camps, man?
Just in coaching, just, showing kids, new techniques and new drills to do. You know, they can do on their own with their friends at home, and the enjoyment of watching the kids play and learn. And it's just, coaching soccer's fun, especially, when you had such a fun time playing it as a kid yourself. So just giving back is the biggest thing, and teaching them what you know so they can get better. And hopefully they can play here at Michigan State or some other college, or make their varsity team, or maybe the national team eventually at some time in their life. So, yeah.
And it had to be cool working with Damon Rensing as well, who's the head coach. And it's so amazing what Damon has done here at Michigan State with the Michigan State men's soccer program. I mean, this is a squad that I believe has made the Elite Eight, and had consistent success. They have been consistent under Damon. And funny story about Damon, I was actually at a local joint here in the area, and I'm sitting there having a pop, right? I met a friend there, and all of a sudden the waitress comes over and she says, you know, the next round's free. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Free? Is you guys got a promotion happening right now?
Yeah, right.
And he's like, no, that guy is paying. And they point down as Damon, like, waving at me. I'm like, Damon, what's up, man? So I got a chance to see him. This is a few weeks ago. Tell him about that story, all right? He'll know what I'm talking about.
I'll ask him.
It's got to be cool working with Damon, though, right?
Yeah, he's a very generous man. I mean, he went to school here. He played soccer there. Was an assistant coach under the great Joe Baum. And, you know, he's loves this program. You know, his son Drew plays for a local club around here. And, you know, his wife's great. And it's just a great family, the Rensings. They're, and same with Kale Wasserman and his wife, and same with Ben and his wife as well. They're just a great group of individuals that love soccer, and they want to spread their knowledge throughout, you know, anyone that comes to a camp or within the Lansing area. So it's, they're a great staff.
I have to ask, Brooks, as we dive into the World Cup here now, you know, this being a World Cup year and you getting a chance to, again, work with the youth and talk with them, every World Cup year, do you see an uptick when it comes to youth interest in the sport? Have you seen that this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think as the sport grows, you know, from year to year and interest becomes a little, you know, more with, you know, MLS getting a little better every year, bringing in the international players we talked about before. And yeah, you see it a little bit. Do kids watch enough? No. Do they watch more as a fan than as trying to analyze it and break it down? Maybe as, you know, maybe a kid growing up playing basketball and football would want to understand the tactics, the analysis of what's going on the football field or the basketball court. I think that's one of the biggest difference with the youth soccer players is it's just not ingrained enough young in our culture. Like, you know, England, they're already playing pickup soccer. It's a little quicker at, like, you know, the 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old with the possession and the pace of the game where it takes a little longer. It's not ingrained yet in this culture. And that's the biggest thing is it has to get ingrained in the culture for it to start to, like, you see a really massive progression. It's getting there. But as far as, like, the pro soccer and watching, like, that's a big thing, too, is watching and looking for analytics and tactics and whatnot rather than just watching, well, I'm watching one player, Ronaldo or Messi, you know, the entire game. I don't care about the other 21 players on the field. You know, that's a big thing to watch the whole game and what, you know, what you do without the ball. Because think about it. You may only touch the ball in a 90-minute game. You may only have the ball for 3 minutes in a 90-minute game if you really think about it.
Wow.
You really,
I never thought about that. Yeah.
You may be on the ball for about 3 minutes, but what you do with those 3 minutes with the ball, whether you know it's a quick 1-2 with someone or you're dribbling, you know, it's 3 dribbles in a pass or whatnot, what you do with that in your decision-making affects the game. So, I mean, you're really not on the ball for a long time if you really think about it, unless your team's in possession the whole time. But, you know, that happens in the college game at times and same with the pro game. But, I mean, you really don't have a lot of time on the ball in a 90-minute game.
When you work with the kids, for instance, the kids you're working with this week in camp, what are the fundamental areas of the sport in which the youth you work with are lacking in?
I think what's big for American players, it's the technical side and knowing when to turn with the ball, what's the proper turn, using the inside, the outside, the foot, using both feet, using all sides of the feet. I think the one of the biggest underused parts of your foot is kind of the sole of the foot, the bottom of the foot, to turn the ball, to change direction, to stop on it. You know, kids take the ball with the outside of the foot when, you know, they're turning in defenders, when you need to take it with the inside to go the other direction. And, you know, when to do a pullback or like a Maradona, you know, in the middle of the field, and when is it not time to do that? When is it time to play simple a bit? And I think sometimes coaches get in, you see the Spanish play, and it's possession, tiki-taka. But, I mean, part of the game is you must go forward at times, right? And then you must protect the ball from the defender. So it's the little things like that where the game needs to grow a lot, where if you watch younger players in Europe or even different parts of the country, like maybe in California, some of the kids are doing a little better than here, the kids in Michigan. Michigan's always been a very good state for youth soccer. It's always been one of the best ones in the Midwest region. It's just, you know, it's a little different in Florida and California. You're playing 24/7. You know, the culture and ethnicity, you know, within the certain areas of California and Florida, there's a big difference there, too. So,
I can speak on that. I tell you what, I was down in the Miami area last week. And, of course, I believe Brazil was playing. Didn't Brazil play last week, right?
They did. Belgium beat them.
Right. And I'm sitting there, and we were on South Beach, and I'm walking by the Clevelander one night. And there are so many people crowded around these televisions going insane over this game. I'm like, what? is that the Super Bowl? I had to do a double take. I mean, yeah. But like you said, I mean, the culture, you know, because Miami, I mean, that's a primary Latino hub, right? And a lot and soccer is their thing.
Yeah.
But like you said, I think we still have some ways to go to ingrain it in the culture of our youth and just our culture in general.
Yes.
So, all right, we'll flip to that now to the semifinals when it comes to the World Cup. We've got France and Belgium that will be getting underway in less than 15 minutes from now, 2 p.m. And then tomorrow, I believe we have Croatia and England playing. What has really intrigued you throughout this World Cup thus far? Any surprises and big takeaways for you, Brooks?
Yeah. How about the host nation, Russia? I mean, upsetting Spain. And, you know, no one was sure if they'd get out of their group or not because, you know, maybe with Mo Salah in Egypt because of the year he's having with Liverpool FC with all the goals he was scoring in the EPL. And they had the shoulder injury in the Champions League game. You know, Ramos brings him down. He has a shoulder injury. You know, he could have probably played the first game of the group stage. But yeah, Russia was surprised. Did well. I mean, it's always an advantage when you play in your country, right? You have the home advantage. You should do well. But I mean, the lowest seeded team, they were like, I think their FIFA rankings, they were 70 in the world, and they get to the Elite Eight. I mean, that's pretty big, and that was a surprise. You know, there have been a lot of good upsets. You know, there were a lot of great games. And I think talking with people, this has been one of the most exciting World Cups, you know, in a while, where the games, you never knew who was going to win.
And how long would you say? Was it more exciting than 4 years ago?
Yeah, a lot more exciting than 4 years ago, that's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Like I said, with the upsets and the closest of the games, never knowing, I mean, there were some decent games. There were some blowouts, but there were some decent games where the weaker team, you know, was putting up a good fight against some of the teams. And look at Russia and Spain. I mean, no one thought Russia was going to win. I mean, Russia getting Croatia to PKs. I mean, Croatia's Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic, two of the best, you know, center mids internationally in the game. You know, one plays for FC Barcelona, the other plays for Real Madrid. Two powerhouse clubs. They're always in. Getting far in Champions League football and winning La Liga every year and Copa del Rey and all that. And, you know, so that speaks, you know, it speaks volumes of what Russia could do this year with what they had. And, you know, and that's good, you know, points out like some of the surprises in this FIFA World Cup and the amount of, you know, PKs we've had as well. There's been a lot.
Mm-hmm. A lot of parity, too. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the big names in the soccer world, you know, I felt like every other day I was looking at my phone and saying, oh, Messi is eliminated now. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is going on here?
Yeah.
I think that speaks to how the game is really growing. And it already is the most popular sport in the world. But I feel like these other countries are catching up to some of the elite teams, right?
Catching up. And if you look at the Portugals and the Argentinas, you know, I mean, it's tough. Like, you know, there's so much talent in, like, Argentina, you know, like Pablo Dybala for Juventus didn't even join, you know, Argentina. So, like, oh, he plays the same position as Messi. Like, is it really worth it to add him to the to the roster for the Argentinian national team in the World Cup? And, you know, and that's where where club soccer is a lot different from international soccer. You're qualifying for all, you're playing all these qualifying games to get into the World Cup, and now you must pick your best roster, but it's never always the most talented roster. If you look at Germany, and the big thing was there was a divide between the veterans and the new guys. I mean, leaving Leroy Sané off, you know, a guy who played for Manchester City this past year and did terrific, you know, leaving him off, the younger guys didn't like him. There was a little mesh there. And when the chemistry doesn't go right, you know, it's in international soccer, you know, things can really take a turn. And that's what kind of happened in Germany and a little bit for Argentina, right? So, you know, chemistry is a huge thing with teams going into international play in the World Cup.
Brooks Lambeer, he's a soccer expert, if you can't tell, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers, as well as an assistant coach for Lawrence Tech University. All right, Brooks, who's your favorite to win this whole thing now?
Oh, wow. Last time I said Belgium, I'm sticking with Belgium. But honestly, like, I wouldn't mind seeing England win. You know, they've struggled, like we've talked about, but like I said, Gareth Southgate is... got them playing and they're feeling it again, the English, and they're all happy. You know, there's the English guy on our Lawrence Tech staff, Steve Cook, and he's been
he's going to be on an emotional roller coaster right now, right?
Yeah, well, all of them are because, you know, again, it's the chemistry thing, you know, with the old guys they had and, you know, too many guys playing the same position and whatnot and not doing enough for the team. And And, you know, so, I mean, if France, Belgium, or England, or Croatia, you know, either one of them, four of them win, you know, I wouldn't be upset if any four of them won, which someone's going to win, obviously.
Right.
But I think my pick is still Belgium. I think they still have very good depth. De Bruyne, Hazard, Courtois, who came up with some huge saves in that Brazil game, especially at the end of the match, just to keep Neymar out of the net there, that is his shot.
Right.
So, yeah, Belgium for sure. It'd be interesting to see Belgium and England play in the final. That'd be quite the matchup.
That would be. Mm-hmm. And the final will take place on Sunday, just 5 days from now. Sunday, July 15th. Yeah. That will be a morning match here in the States. And I know that England, I saw this story this morning, England, if they play that Sunday in the final, the government is trying to put together a petition to get that Monday, make it a holiday so that everybody can recover from the celebration on Sunday. How cool is that? I think we should do that for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, here in America. I think that'd be really cool. So we'll see what happens if England does make that final. And I do want to bring up two stories before we let you out of here,
sure.
Brooks. I want to get your thoughts on how a story broke a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The 2026 World Cup was awarded to a joint bid of the United States, Mexico, and Canada. How big of a game changer is that?
It's huge for this country. I mean, 94 was the last time we had it, and it sparked a big intrigue. You know, that's how the MLS got started in 96, and it started kind of the soccer culture rolling in the United States. And that 2026 bid, the majority of the games will be in the United States. I think there may be five or six games in Mexico, and then 3, 4, 5 in Canada. Mm-hmm. But I think as a North America as a whole, I think it'll be great. You know, we got the Canadian national team. You know, they have a lot of great young guys coming up, and with Alfonso Davies for the Vancouver Whitecaps, a guy that's, you know, being scouted by big clubs, Manchester United, Bayern Munich, I think Real Madrid, PSV Eindhoven out of the Netherlands was one of them as well. So, you know, that, you know, it's good for all the countries to share, you know, the amount of money and giving it back into their international programs for all levels, the youth and the men's and also the women's as well. So I think it'll be huge for this country. Hopefully the second time around we host, mm-hmm. you know, and we got a couple years too. Don't forget, you know, we make the World Cup, you know, in the next cycle and then the next one.
Popularity,
you know,
could grow up, right? We never know. We don't know how big the fanfare will be once it does come here in 2026.
Exactly. And then you have MLS expansion. You know, we're trying to get the 28. We're going to get the 28 teams here soon by 2020-21. So Miami's getting a team and Nashville's getting a pro team. Cincinnati, you know, we're looking at some other ones. Detroit's still in the race for, you know, hopefully in the next cycle for it. San Diego's there. St. Louis wants to get back in it. So Austin, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how many, you know, cities get a bid, and, you know, if teams, you know, like Columbus in their situation, if they move to Austin or another city or whatnot. So, you know, there's some exciting things happening around American soccer. Then with the expansion of USL Division II, then USL Division III coming in next year. I know Lansing and Toledo, we're looking at doing USL D3. Madison, Wisconsin has it. You know, USL in the heart of Chicago in Lincoln Park, 2020, that's going to come.
Wow.
So
yeah.
20,000 seat stadium. So, you know, especially in the Midwest, there's a lot of stuff out on the East Coast, down South, and on the West Coast. There's not enough, like, centrally in America. You know, we only have two pro teams, you know, Cincy and Indy 11, really. So,
right.
You know, in Chicago and Columbus, obviously. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see when 2026 comes around, you know, how big it gets here, you know, compared, you know, if we make the World Cup, you know, 2022. So it'll be interesting to see.
Definitely exciting news. And final note here, just your reaction to the news that broke today. Cristiano Ronaldo taking his talents to defending Serie A champions, Juventus.
Yeah.
Were you expecting that? Surprised at all by that news? Or
I mean, it had been in the talks, like the rumor mill, you know, as we all do, look on social media, and we see that that's a possibility. And, you know, Ronaldo and Messi have been linked. You know, when Beckham gets that in Miami, you know, they love Miami. A lot of international guys. The internationals in Europe love to come over to America. You know, they like to go to L.A. and they love to go to Miami because no one knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, obviously, you know, Ronaldo and Messi, if they walk by, or Beckham or whatnot. But, you know, a lot of them like to, you know, vacation and kind of spend their time over here. So is it a surprise that Ronaldo's going there? It had been in the works for a while that he wanted to change either back to England or to another league. So
kind of saw it coming in, right?
For sure, yeah. And Juventus is a great program in Italy. It's world class, you know, world class players, you know, throughout how long they've ever been a club for. So it'll be a good move for him and good for Italian soccer. And hopefully next time, right, maybe he comes to MLS. You know, unfortunately it's his retirement and we're trying not to be a retirement league, but you know, it happens. I take Ronaldo, even if, you know, it was less 3 years, you know, because he'd still draw fans and still do amazing stuff. So
for sure, yeah. Just from an economic standpoint, right?
Exactly.
You speak of world class. Well, Brooks, you've been a world class guest. Really appreciate your time, man. And we'll let you get back down the road back to the camp. All right.
Exactly.
You got it, Brooks Lambeer, Midwest Regional Scout for the Portland Timbers and assistant coach at Lawrence Tech University. Brooks, thanks so much for your time, my man.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate it.
You got it. All right. Well. We'll just skip the second break here, Ian, and I want to bring up this story because I saw this story over the weekend, and it's intriguing on so many levels. Probably the most incredible rescue mission that I have ever read about. But 12 Thai boys that are I believe they're on a. I want to make sure I get the team right here. They play on the Wild Boars. And they after practice one day, and I believe there's a baseball team. I believe it was a baseball team. Am I wrong on that, Ian?
I believe there is too.
Believe it's a baseball team. They were soccer players. 12 Thai soccer players and their coach had been trapped in a cave in northern Thailand for more than 2 weeks. And get this, they all have been rescued as of today. This is what was posted on the Thai Navy SEALs Facebook page. Quote, "We are not sure if this is a miracle, a science, or what. All 13 wild boars," that's the name of the soccer team, "are now out of the cave." It's a dramatic story. These boys hiked into the Tam Luang Nang Nan cave system on June 23rd. They were trapped by floodwaters. And this story just riveted the entire world. It took an increasingly happy turn over the last 3 days as an international team of divers brought out the boys in three stages. And today's rescue mission succeeded in retrieving the last four boys and the coach. They are all in great health. However, I do want to note, though, that there was one of the rescuers who were actually filling an oxygen tank because they line oxygen tanks throughout the rescue path. One of the rescuers who were trying to fill an oxygen tank sadly passed away. I do want to note that. So one life was taken here. But the fact that all 12 of these players, along with their coach, were saved and rescued. I'm going to bring you to the details of this story because they actually have graphics of how the rescue mission was planned out. And how they taught some of these boys how to swim, because a lot of them were submerged in the water trying to get out. It is incredible. I'm telling you, folks, there's going to be a movie made about this story, all right? In the meantime, we're on a 23-hour break. Much love to Brooks Lambeer and the entire Current Sports team. We'll be back at it same time, same place on Wednesday. Be easy, people.